guys. Surprise.
It's Magic the Amateuring. Not what you were expecting?
No.
I know.
You've been downloading us every week, perhaps, but this time you're surprised.
Yeah.
Or maybe it's your first time here, and you're super surprised.
Or maybe we hid this episode under another podcast's name.
You thought you were getting This American Life, sucker.
I don't think so.
If you have never listened to us before, we are Magic the Amateuring, a podcast featuring three amateurs of varying levels of expertise in the game of Magic the Gathering. My name is Ben. I've been playing for quite some time, almost since Fallen Empires, on and off. And I've taught two of my friends how to play, and now they follow me around like ducklings. And I keep crossing roads, just hoping.
Wow. I think Ben just said that
he wants us to get hit by a car.
No, I'm hoping we'll cross, someday we'll cross that final road and we'll be able to settle down.
Yeah, that final road.
What Ben's metaphor means is that he taught Meg and I to play a little more than a year ago, and here we are now, addicted to the game and loving it.
Yep, we are the big ol' amateurs. And Ben's like a smaller amateur because he knows more. So his amateurness is smaller.
Mm. Okay, I get it.
You get it?
But as a duck, he is bigger.
He's a bigger duck and a smaller amateur.
Makes perfect sense.
Of course it does.
You guys, we've got a good show for you coming up today. For the noob segment, it's about limited mana bases, which can be a tricky road to handle.
Mm-hmm.
So we're going to help you out with that. We've got a history shit about the expansions in Magic. We've got a flavor text theater, Dear Abby. We have some username puns coming up later in the show. So if you submitted a review on iTunes, get ready. And some more fun stuff that, you know, you just can't predict because it's life.
Yeah.
Can't plan it.
You can't plan it.
You can try.
Oh, and I have tried.
But then you'll get hit by a car when you're crossing the road as a duck.
The final road. Maria, what's happening on For the Noobs?
We're talking about limited mana bases, everybody. What the heck does that mean?
What the heck does that mean?
Well, when
you... Where am I?
Okay.
That's a good question.
Ben's having an episode. So when you're building your limited deck, you normally have 23 spells, 17 lands, something like that. So we all know that, right? Listeners, did you know that?
Yeah, I hope so.
If you did, good job. If you didn't, good job. You're in the right place.
Yeah, now you know. If it's super aggressive and maybe your curve tops out at like four, then maybe you run 16 lands.
Yep.
If you have a lot of beef, a lot of top end spells, then maybe you're gonna run 18 lands.
Yeah, but that's pretty simple. That's pretty, you know, basic stuff. 17 if your curve's super low, 16 if you got a lot of beefy dudes, a lot of monstrous, maybe 18. Besides that, you also need to decide what color lands you're gonna put in your deck.
Yes. Hopefully what color you're going to put in is pretty straightforward. If you're playing blue spells, you're gonna want islands. White spells, you're gonna want plains.
That's not what I meant.
Well, I'm just clarifying because it sounded like you had a question. But the division of lands within your deck. So
yes.
If I'm running a blue-white deck, how many islands and how many plains? If I'm running green-black, how many forests and how many swamps? And that depends on a couple of things. A way that I have heard of to do this is if you just count up the little colored mana symbols and the casting costs of all of your spells, then that will give you a rough ratio.
Yeah. So if you have a 2-drop that costs white, that would count for 2 for white.
Exactly.
And if you had a 6-drop that was blue 5, then that would count as 1 for blue.
Yes.
And the idea there is just to get an idea, how important is it to have certain mana sources of certain colors? And that's a good... That's like a good first level approximation.
Yeah, just go through, count them out.
If you just have no idea, that's a good place to start. Count those out and then try to make your ratio of lands match that ratio of colored mana symbols.
Yeah, for sure.
So before we get too far deep into it, I want to mention, so when you say you're running a 2-color limited deck, which is the norm.
Mm-hmm. I'm running a 2-color limited deck, which is the norm.
Okay.
Okay.
What would you say if your colors are fairly evenly distributed, you would want to hover around between division of your lands?
I mean, if it looks like a pretty strict split, then it's going to be something like 9-8. And pick whichever color you're a little bit heavier in. Or if you have, say you have double casting costs that come early, like a Vanguard of Brahmaz or something like that, which costs white-white, and you have a lot of stuff like that, or maybe you have a Swordwise Centaur, then you're going to want to take into consideration, especially if you're aggro, well, how important is it that I have green-green in my opening hand? If it's really important that I have green-green, then I'm going to want to bump up the green number.
Right. So this is a good second thing to look at, is you look at your deck and you figure out, okay, first of all, yeah, are there any? Do I have any double casting cost two drops?
Mm-hmm.
That's going to make you want to lean heavier towards that color because it's important to hit two by that turn. You also want to look at stuff like, you know, do I have a Voyaging Satyr? Is it important that I have a green on turn two? Do I have mm-hmm. any one drops that I usually you want to play your one drop creatures on turn one?
Yes.
Yeah, my little favorite hoplites.
Remember that time you played Megan and you had a favorite hoplite in your hand?
That was the thing I did. That was the thing I did, and I was not proud of it when it happened.
But you also want to be careful because, you know, maybe you have some combat tricks or instants. You don't want to consider those one drops for the purposes of establishing your mana base because you're probably not casting those until at least turn 3, 4, or 5.
I God's willing on turn one. What am I God's willing? Don't worry about it. I'm just gonna,
doing it.
God's willing on turn
my
one.
My Ornithopter. Do you guys know what an Ornithopter is?
Yes.
It's an O2 flyer that costs 0.
Okay.
It's free!
Or is it?
Can't beat that price.
I can play that Ornithopter on turn one and God's willing it right away.
All right, so what else do we need to know when we're constructing our mana base?
I sometimes run up against this question.
Mm-hmm.
If, say, I'm really heavy one color and my mm-hmm. other second color is very light, mm-hmm. what is the lowest I should go on my support color if, say, I have 3 to 4 spells that are of the second color?
Mm, so you're almost...
Mm. Almost mono, but not.
Mm.
I mean, my number would be 6.
You don't want to go lower than 6?
Maybe 5.
Yeah.
Maybe 5.
Here's my question.
Yeah.
What are those spells?
Let's say they're kind of like a little, what? Well, maybe a 2-drop, a couple 4-drops, and like a huge bomb.
Okay.
Oh.
And none of them have double casting cost.
For sake of argument, they do not.
Okay. So you do have a 2-drop, right?
Yes. But it's probably got to be a really good 2-drop that's relevant later in the game, or why do I have it in there?
But if you have it in your opening hand, you're still going to want to cast it on turn 2.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you've got, you have... 4 spells of your other color, because you're so heavy mono. I mean, usually if you're really heavy one color, you don't need more than 10 sources of that color. And so the only reason you would play more than 10 lands of one color is if you just wanted to be super consistent, or if you had a very heavy, you know, double casting cost color commitment. You know, for example, if white was your main color, there are a lot of white cards that have white in the casting cost,
right.
So then you might want to play 11. The way to think about it is you've got these 4 spells of your off color, say it's blue,
sure,
and then you know, what's the probability that you're going to draw one of those before you draw one of your islands? And typically, I mean, I wouldn't want to go below 6 if I had 4 spells.
I think that's exactly what I said, exactly the way that I said it.
We're nothing
mostly
if not
I'm just
restating
about, yeah.
on the show.
No, but, I'm just saying, I appreciate the fact that Ben also said it the exact same way.
But it really does matter what those spells are, because if it is just a few bombs, then... you know, you can probably get away with 3 or 4 because you're not going to be casting them until later on in the game.
Okay.
But if there is a 2-drop that you know you want to cast early, it's worth it to be able to cast it early because you're not paying that much of a penalty because you're almost always going to have the other lands that you need.
Right.
But I think I would start out at 11, you know, if that was your breakdown, and maybe even consider... I would consider 12 if it was like 3 spells or less, or if the spells were more relevant in the late game.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
There you go, Maria.
Thank you.
There you go.
Thank you. And also, just to go alongside with this, this is sort of an offshoot, but if you are splashing one card, how many sources do you need for one card splash? With
do
no
you,
fixing.
Do I have fixing? No, no fixing?
Just this is just the basic.
What was I doing?
Two sources for one card.
Yes, usually you want two sources for one card, and the reason we kind of talked about it before.
I just want to put it all there.
It's bad if you draw your spell before you draw either one of your sources, right?
Yes.
And so if you have, if you only have one source, then you basically have a 50% chance that you're going to draw that spell before you can cast it, which means it's going to be a dead card that's just doing nothing in your hand. Mm-hmm. If you have two sources, then, you know, there's three ways you can arrange that, right? It could be spell, land, spell, land, spell. And so as it works out to be like a 1 in 3 chance that you're going to draw that spell before the other two.
You guys, probability.
Straight up math.
Wow, I didn't know I was doing math when I got into this game.
That was not an opinion question. That was a math question. Math answer.
I know some people say you should run three sources for one splash.
Well, that would give you, I mean, it would give you a much better chance of drawing your sources before the splash, but you have to weigh that against what you're doing to the rest of your deck.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Good
because
point.
Because most of your spells are not your splash. And so if you think about what's the probability of you drawing some other spell and being unable to cast it because you have only sources of your other two colors, then,
you don't want to end up with that those GD forests when what you need is a plains, man.
Yeah. GD.
GD forests.
JC. Mm.
AD.
PF.
QM.
KO, guys.
Oh, God. Is
that's
that
actually that's actually an acronym for something.
Not so, guys, do you always play 17 lands?
I have played 16 and I have played 18.
As have I, but I would say 95% of the time, maybe 98, I'm running 17.
Mm. Yeah.
When we were playing early on in Triple Theros draft, I would routinely play 18 lands for Monstrous.
Yeah.
But I kind of got away from that. Yeah. And now that, I don't know. I don't know why. I left it behind and it was fine.
I would say I would argue in favor of 18 lands if you're doing what you just suggested. If you had no fixing but you want to do a splash.
Oh, okay.
I would probably run an extra land just for the splash, in which case you want to be sure that whatever you're splashing for is so good that it's worth two spots in your deck because you're basically giving up another spell to be able to play it just to have a more consistent mana base.
Better be good.
Is it that good, Maria?
It's that good, Ben.
Oh, my God. That's pretty good.
Wow. Wow.
So that's those are your mana bases. If you got other colors than the 5 in Magic.
Yeah, if you have other colors, then...
then I don't know how you're going to... where do you got that card?
But good job. Good job. That's
you're
going to
need some purple lands if you find yourself with a card that requires purple lands.
Yeah. What game are you playing?
You're having an aneurysm. Call the hospital
or a stroke.
Now.
Yeah, if you have other questions, these are really just general guidelines. There's so many tiny differences that you can look at in your deck. For example, do you have a creature with fire-breathing abilities? Maybe you want to play a lot of red because of that.
Do I?
I don't know. Do you have...
I was just wondering. You sounded like maybe you knew if I did or not.
Maybe you have, 3 white combat tricks. That means you might want to lean heavier towards white just so you can play multiple tricks in one turn.
Ooh.
Nice.
These are all things that you have to think about, and the importance is just to get a feel for which one's most important and then which ones are less important when you're making those close decisions.
It's really important to not be joking around when you're making your mana base.
No.
It's really important.
Don't make no jokes.
It's really important to be earnest while you're making your mana base.
Mostly because, it's really hard when you're playing an opponent to see his mana base and be like, oh, I get it. I get the joke you were trying to make when you put together that mana base. It's a little insulting.
Yeah.
I think the most important thing when building a mana base is your lands and what set they're from. Are they pretty? Are they perhaps
Maria
foiled out? Do you maybe have some cool snow-covered lands like I do?
Do you, Maria, do you, for flavor reasons, refuse to cast Theros spells off of non-Theros lands?
Correct.
Excuse me. This is not a land from Theros. It cannot cast a Nimbus Naiad. Does this Naiad look like she's from Abyssin? I don't think so.
How are you casting that favored hoplite when that's clearly a mirrored in plans? You can't use metal mana on my meat man.
By the way, listeners, our store has a lot of Valley girls who come and play.
Just oh my god. Your sleeves are like trash.
Excuse me. I don't want your acroan horse.
Did you build your deck in the dark?
Could you move your ratty ass playmat? It's touching mine.
Your dice look like you just assembled them from a random handful of dice that you picked up off the ground.
Gag me with a deck box. History shit.
Oh.
Expansions.
Man, so you guys, there weren't always expansions and core sets. There wasn't always like, you know, M14 followed by Theros, followed by Born of the Gods. What used to be like?
Now? We have a core set and then we've got
three expansions.
Yeah, so right now that's what they do normally is they make a core set every year and then they have three expansions, more or less.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But back in the old days...
Tell us about the old days, old Ben.
It wasn't always like that, right? When the very first Magic set came out, they did not really know for sure what this thing was going to be. They didn't know if they would sell enough to ever make, you know, more cards. So the very first set was called Alpha, and it was just, these are all the cards. This is the game, and you can buy packs. It was a very limited run, and it ended up selling out pretty fast, so fast that they ended up doing two more printings that were basically the same set in the same year.
What do you mean, basically?
Well, they reprinted with Beta, and Beta was exactly the same, except that there were like, they're like, oh, we'll put in these cards that we forgot to put in the first set.
What do you mean they forgot?
In Alpha.
Whoops. I mean, sometimes you just get busy, and you're like, oh, whoops. Yeah. Forgot to do that.
So the Alpha set had 9 dual lands because they forgot to put in Volcanic Island.
They just forgot?
there's some error.
Maria, it's just like they had a lot on their plate that day.
It was like when you go on a trip and you forget your undies.
Exactly.
Oops.
And there were only 4 circles of protection. So there's circle protection red, blue, white, and green. But they forgot to put black in.
Yeah.
Sounds like something I would do. Jeez.
And maybe they forgot to put lots of other shit in too that were not part of obvious cycles.
That's true. There were just, some random cards in there that they were like I don't know. I don't know.
Oh, that's really funny.
Yeah. So the beta printing was printed just later that year. They're like, we'll just slip in these other ones, okay? And both those sets had black borders. Because they were way back in the day. You guys, Magic sets used to have white. Some of them had white borders, by the way. We'll get into that later.
That happened.
Wow.
That was a thing.
And these cards are the cards are almost the same, but you can actually tell the Alpha cards, the corners are a little more square, which used to be an issue. They used to not be able to play Alpha cards in tournaments because you could tell from the back that they were different.
Mm. Could you tell if they were in a sleeve that they were different?
No. I don't know. So, now you can just play with sleeves. You can?
I can.
You're the corner whisper?
I'm the corner whisper.
Tell me, card, what kind of corners do you have?
I'm just going to put my hand on this card.
So then...
Ancestral recall.
So this is all 1993, and then again in 1993, they reprinted Unlimited, which is basically the same as Beta, but it had white borders. It had all the same cards.
Except a few that they forgot.
No, this time they got it right.
And they just were like, oh, I'm feeling more white bordered.
The idea was they would release this so that collectors could still clearly distinguish that they had the original
separate
printings
sets
of the cards. So yeah.
Oh snap!
Because so there were not set like, markers on these cards.
This is like some antiques roadshow shit.
Yes, this was way before they were putting expansion icons on the cards themselves.
Has a magic card ever been on antiques roadshow?
Can you tell me if this circle of protection is alpha, beta, or unlimited? Oh well, you see that it has white borders. I don't know what accent I'm doing.
It's okay. As the producer, I'm not putting this one in the show.
To me, that sounds like an Arabian accent, which segues nicely into the next expansion.
What is it, Ben?
Arabian Nights.
Oh.
This was the first expansion. So it was the first time they were printing new cards that were not mistakenly left out of the set. And it was, you know, kind of similar to Theros. It's supposed to be a very flavorful expansion.
Mm-hmm.
It was a small set. There were 78 cards in it.
Oh.
That is a baby set.
Well, just a little guy.
That's more like a fetus set. That's more like a glint in the eye set.
I think the boosters for this were also smaller than normal. And it was designed by Richard Garfield himself and had lots of, you know, weird cards. You know, Aladdin had a ring and a lamp and some shit like that.
So is this the set where Scheherazade comes from?
Yes.
That is Richard Garfield's favorite magic card, by the way.
I am sure.
What does that card do, Maria?
When you play it, you start a sub-game of magic. So you pause your game you're playing. You start a sub-game with just the cards that are left in the game.
What the fuck is a sub-game?
It's just a new game, a tiny game.
Okay.
And you play with those cards, and the winner of that game, what do they get?
The loser loses half their life rounded up.
That is a lot of work for not a lot of payoff.
Not a lot.
It's true.
But fun.
Yeah. Also, I mean, what's stopping you from having a sub-sub game?
I would love to play Scheherazade in a sub-sub game.
If you've ever had a sub-sub game on a sub.
We're obsessed with our listener who listens on a submarine. Oh God.
You guys, we shouldn't play favorites. But I think it's clear that we have one.
I also think it would be interesting if you had a sub game on a plane.
A sub game on a plane? I was playing
or in a subway.
I was having a sub game on the subplane. Which is a plane inside
or
of another plane.
Having a sub game while you're substitute teaching on a submarine while eating a Subway sandwich.
Yeah.
If you can pull that off, tweet us at MTAcast. And we'll send you one pack of Arabian Nights.
Pixar didn't happen.
Pixar didn't happen. Yep.
The next expansion after that was Antiquities. This was an artifact-themed set.
Oh.
And this had, you know, crazy stuff like the Urza Lands.
What are those?
No one likes the Urza Lands. The Urza Lands,
there are three different lands that make one colorless mana, but when you put them together...
Holy shit, they tap for a lot.
How much?
Seven.
Oh,
seven total.
Do I need all three?
Lands. If you have one of each land, then they tap for a total of seven. And it's Urza's.
Yeah, so you can play
Karna.
It's Urza's power plant, Urza's mine, and Urza's tower.
There you go.
And if you get them out, you can play Karna on turn three.
Did people used to do that in Standard?
Oh. Well, I mean, it wasn't called Standard, but yeah.
Yeah. And that's still a thing that they do in Modern.
Yeah,
oh, really?
it's a Modern deck, Urzatron.
Okay. Cool.
Because now they have a lot of cards that'll
help Urzatron.
Bind the lands.
That's awesome.
They call it the Tron.
Yep.
Next up was Revised. This was another core set. Also called Third Edition. Why is it called Third Edition when it was the fourth core set? I do not know.
Maybe they weren't counting...
They probably weren't counting beta. They're like,
they were like, oh, that was a whoops.
I think alpha was probably the one they're not counting, but whatever.
They were like, that's a mulligan.
Let's debate which is the one they weren't counting.
So in this set, they actually took a lot of cards out. Basically all the good cards.
Wow.
Because they were like, oops.
Too good.
They're like double oops.
Yeah,
but this was the time they realized it. They didn't realize.
Well... Before, I think they realized that certain cards were too good.
Yeah.
But because they didn't realize that this was going to be a serious tournament game where people were buying packs just to get as many of each card. I mean, before that, they also did not have a rule that said, you have to have 60-card decks. It was 40-card decks.
Oh,
and
shit.
There was no limit to the number of cards you could put in each deck.
I'm just gonna play 40 Black Lotuses.
Right.
So I'm not gonna cast anything with them. I'm just gonna make more mana than your mind can fathom.
Right, exactly. So you could just play a deck that was all dual lands, dark rituals, channels, and fireballs. And why would you not play that deck?
Yikes. Yeah. You guys, the first time machine that's invented, what I'm doing is going back in time and playing that deck.
Nice.
And getting super rich off of, you know,
just
kids in coffee shops.
So they took out the Black Lotuses, the Moxes, all the Power 9, basically. And they still had all of the dual lands. This set, again, had white borders. And then it was kind of hard to tell, actually, the difference between this set and Unlimited. Like, the only difference was that the Unlimited cards looked a lot better because they were darker. Like, the ink, they ran out of ink or something for this set.
They ran out of ink.
Nice.
So all the cards looked faded and shitty.
Well, you can tell that this card is from the revised edition because of the faded printing quality on the front. It just looks a bit like shit.
But how much is it worth?
Oh, I'm going to have to go with a rough estimate of $350.
That's not good enough. I have to sell my kidney.
We'll be back to this episode of Antiquities Roadshow after a message from your local station.
That person had it rough.
They needed more than $350.
That was revised. That was the first core set that was widely available. Or maybe I just say that because that's the first one I bought.
Do you still remember buying it, Ben?
Aw, Ben.
Sure do. Remember being sitting at the card shop, MVP. That was the name of the card shop.
Okay.
And opening packs.
Was it like a baseball card shop?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, remember when those were a thing? Anyway.
The guy ran it was named Monty. And he did not realize when he opened that store that he was getting into the Magic and Pokemon business.
It must have been a surprise not only for the designers of the game, but people who were selling these cards.
The next expansion was The Dark, which we have discussed previously this show. This had some... Oh, sorry. Actually, the next expansion was Legends.
Okay.
Which we've also discussed on this show. It's got a lot of multicolored cards, a lot of crazy... And the first set that actually had legendary creatures in it.
Yeah.
Had a ton of cards, a lot of, random shitty cards. And as usual, a few ridiculously insane cards.
Yeah, give me one.
Yeah. Mana Drain, I believe, was in this.
Oh, was it? Okay.
Yeah, which is a counter spell that lets you basically steal a lot of mana from your opponent and then play something ridiculous.
I want to point out that if you're interested in hearing our show about The Dark, because we did do a show about it and we did actually open a pack of, was it From The Dark that we opened?
Yeah, it was From The Dark.
We cracked the Dark Pack. It was pretty fun. So that's in our archives, which you can find on magictheamateuring.com.
This also had a card called Eureka in it, which is a sorcery for green sorcery that costs 4. And it says, I'll read the original text. It says, both players may take any permanent in their hand and put it directly into play. Players take turns playing one card from their hand until neither wants to play more permanents.
What?
No other spell or effects of any kind may be used while Eureka is in effect. If a spell has an X in its casting cost, X is 0.
Okay.
Can you read us? Let's read the Oracle on that.
Oracle text says, this would be the current updated text if they printed it today. Starting with you, each player may put a permanent card from his or her hand onto the battlefield. Repeat this process until no one puts a card onto the battlefield. I like how the original card said, until no one wants to put one out.
Yes.
So it's like, even if you don't put it out, but you still want to.
Yeah.
You have to keep going.
Keep going. Keep going. Wow, that sounds like something that's pretty good.
Sure, yeah.
Yeah.
So after that was The Dark, which we've talked about before. I had a lot of weird, evil cards in it.
Nice. Because
it was The Dark. Some blue zombies and ball lightnings and all that shit. Then the next set was Fallen Empires. And this is when...
This is Ben's heyday.
Yeah. I'll just read an excerpt from the MTG Salvation Wiki about this set. The frenetic pace 1994 had blinded everyone to the reality of an upward limit to the number of cards a small set could sell. Fallen Empires was overproduced.
Just sounds grim.
Yeah. Wow. So you can basically still find packs of this and buy them for like a dollar.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
That's crazy.
Because they made way too many of them, because before they'd just been selling everything out as fast as they could make it. And then also all the cards in this set were super shitty because the design process was like, we have to make cards, as many
now.
Cards.
Get ready.
All
Go.
The cards.
Well, we have to make all the cards.
Make cards, quick.
So a lot of my, like when I was playing in middle school, a lot of my friends for their birthday would get a bunch of these cards and then be like, okay, I'm just going to quit playing now.
Really?
Oh, no.
They stuck that hard?
Yeah, they were super bad. I mean, it was basically no point in playing the cards from this set.
Fallen Empires.
If you wanted like a competitive tournament deck.
You would not play any of these.
Well, there were like a few cards. Maybe, you know, there was like, oh, this card is a 2/1 knight, and it has protection from black, and I can pump it for
God.
2 mana.
Wow.
Grody.
Yeah. Wow. Fallen Empire, I'll say. That sounds like the fall of an empire.
That's a pretty good backstory into some of the older sets.
Yeah.
Yeah. After this, there were a few more sets, and then we started after Ice Age, which was supposed to be another, like, it was an expansion, but it was supposed to be similar to a core set in that it was similar size and had a lot of basic lands. There were a few more sets after that. Homelands and Alliances were kind of the expansions for that core set, and that's when they kind of had the idea that, oh, we can start organizing things into blocks.
Okay.
Oh.
Nice. That's a look back through the early history. Wow. Did you guys learn anything? Were you surprised?
Yeah, I was taking copious notes.
And I was eating this marshmallow.
Titan.
So I think we both learned a bit. I have a quick question, though.
Yeah.
You talk about Fallen Empires. Seems like it was like a pretty unpopular set.
Yeah.
Is there a set that jumps to mind as like the most loved Magic set that has happened yet?
Oh.
That is a good question.
I feel like at least now I hear a lot of people reminiscing, even though it didn't happen that long ago, about the Innistrad
block. For sure.
It seems like people generally like really really liked Innistrad. That's true.
Triple Innistrad was one of the best limited formats, or the most beloved limited formats that I've ever played, for sure. So yeah, people talk about that a lot. But that is, I think, just for limited. I think, you know, otherwise it wasn't necessarily the greatest set of all time. I don't know what would be considered the greatest set of all time.
That is a good question.
Listeners, if you have an opinion on which was the greatest set of
the
all
greatest.
Time, the greatest. Tweet at us at MTAcast.
Yeah, Innistrad might be up there. I'd also say Rise of the Eldrazi was a very popular draft format.
Oh, yeah.
And I think the original Ravnica was very beloved.
I think you said that to me, like, Ravnica came after a set that hadn't been super popular.
It came after Kamigawa Block.
And it kind of helped, like, jumpstart the popularity of the game again.
Yeah.
Like, it got some people back into the game.
It resonated in a way that Kamigawa did not. Yeah.
Nice.
Draft update.
Oh, man.
Everybody, Born of the Gods Theros draft has been out for a little while now.
Woo! Mm-hmm.
And we've been playing it.
Yeah,
and
we have.
We've been losing.
Oh, God, have we been losing.
I did a stream on my birthday with Ben here, and we played four games, 4-8-4s, and had the stunning record of 0-4.
We lost in the first round.
Of every single one.
4 times in a row.
Wow.
So why are you guys listening to us? I don't know.
I don't know. We should be listening to you.
It's for our stunning personalities.
Let's take a moment to be silent and listen
to what the,
to what the listener to has to say to us.
Okay.
Hmm.
Oh, good point.
Oh. Okay.
You guys, that was also a little bit the sound of my own disappointment in myself.
Whoa, the listeners just said something really inappropriate.
Whoa, listener.
Hey.
Calm down. I'm a lady.
So, guys, what's going on? What are we doing wrong?
Oh, gosh.
I don't know.
I think one thing that we had noted is valuing commons and uncommons maybe incorrectly. I had the really interesting experience of when I drafted in person It was my first Born of the Gods draft, and I was in person at the store, and I ended up making the finals with a deck that when I drafted it,
you thought
I
was like, bad.
This deck is so, it's really bad. I did not think that it was particularly good at all. And then it did exceedingly well. And then these other decks I felt like, I'm like, oh yeah, do you know what? This is all right. And then I just get my ass kicked.
Mm. Yeah, I've been, I had some drafts at the store that I thought went well. And then the ones I've been on Magic Online have not gone as well. And I do think that I might be undervaluing some of the spells and overvaluing some of the creatures in the set.
Yeah.
Because
which spells do you feel like you've been undervaluing?
Retraction Helix and Sudden Storm are the two that come to mind.
Oh, you guys, I love Sudden Storm.
Because they're cards that they're spells that need support, right? You either need mm-hmm. creature, you basically need creatures to make those spells good.
Mm-hmm.
And you also kind of have, you can't just throw them into any deck. If you don't have some synergy with those cards, they're not mm-hmm. going to do that well.
Yeah, agreed.
And then also, I think I've been falling into the red trap a little bit.
Do you mean red sucked and still sucks?
Yes.
I think that it's not necessarily true. I mean,
well, look.
I've lost to a lot of
red. Follow the hammer.
Well, look. Look, you guys.
I'm looking at you.
What, Ben? We're looking. What are you asking
us
to look at?
Look,
what
any
are we looking at? What are
I'm
we looking at?
Right now.
What are we looking at?
If you're going to go into red, you want to make sure red is super open. That's my opinion.
Okay. Yes, yeah, I agree with that.
That is very true.
If
you want the double, triple follow the hammer deck.
If you take an early red card, even if you first pick a red card, you don't want to assume that red is open unless you see strong signals.
Yeah. Okay. So, like, if you're getting past Bolt of Kuranos, follow the hammer, even, like, signal.
Yeah. Because those are the cards that you want. Kragma Butcher, another actually very solid red card.
Yeah, but I don't think I would take that as a signal.
That's fair. I agree.
I think cards like Follow the Hammer, a Crone Conscriptor, like those are the cards that I'm going to need to see in, you know, picks 3, 4, or 5 before I'm comfortable getting into that color.
Yeah.
I think some commons too are much better than maybe I'm giving them credit for, like a mm-hmm. Crone Skyguard, for instance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, is that first pick quality?
Oh, yeah.
Oh,
really?
A Crone Skyguard? That's a good card.
Oh, God.
I mean, if there's, obviously you're looking at the uncommons and being like, are there, or the rare, like, is it, obviously if it's a really good rare, you're going to take that. But if it's like a Hero's Podium, yeah.
That okay, how about this? Is looking pretty Hunter's cool. Prowess or a Crone Skyguard?
Oh, that's rough.
That's a good question, Maria.
That's a good question.
I have now first picked Hunter's Prowess 3 times.
I mean, I don't think that's a bad card to first
pick. So Hunter's Prowess is a 5-mana sorcery that says target creature gets +3/+3 and trample. Whenever it deals damage to an opponent, draw that many cards.
So it's insane if you get it off.
You get to draw a lot of cards.
Yeah.
I think it's a 5-mana. I think it's really good.
Yeah, I think it's
really
good.
It's first pick. I think it's better than a Crone Skyguard.
Okay.
Yeah, okay. It's really good.
We'll just have to stream again.
See how it goes, man. See how it goes.
I will say, I mean, in that game that we played, we never had that card stuck in our hand.
No, that's true.
We couldn't play it, right?
Yeah. It's just, I was crushing Triple Theros, and I know Megan was too.
Yeah.
It's just like, how much could it change by just adding one pack and subtracting one pack? A lot, I guess.
Well,
yeah.
The thing about drafting the new pack first is that all your signals are going to be different. Your signals for what colors you're supposed to be getting into are different. And not only that, but you have to know how other people are evaluating the cards so that you can follow their signals and get into the colors that are open.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, so if you guys are interested in ever checking out when we might stream or do some draft videos, which we occasionally do, mm-hmm. Follow us on Twitter at MTAcast because we'll post on there or send out a tweet when we're streaming or when we've got a new draft video.
Yeah.
And we usually will post our videos on magictheamateuring.com too. We had a great time. Met some cool people.
Megan was with us in spirit in the chat.
I was. I was not just there in spirit. I was there in typography.
Yes.
I was there in letters. Disagreeing with plenty of your picks.
Yes, you were. And I think you were right in some cases.
I don't know
and
about that.
Wrong in other and cases. And wrong in others.
Sure. Ben would always like to remind the listeners that I am wrong.
Sometimes wrong.
Okay.
And I believe the one, the stream that we did not mark to archives.
No,
so
we did
you
not.
Can't go back and see it. It's lost to time.
Yep.
Just like Maria's 20s.
God damn it. It was my birthday. Now they all know how old I am.
It's okay. It's okay.
Don't
Maria.
Worry. No one's listening to this. But in the future, maybe we'll remember to mark it as archived or figure out how to do it.
I looked yesterday. I was like, I looked for half an hour. I'm like, Where is it?
I don't know.
Anyway, we'll figure it out, guys. We will.
So, signals, man.
Yeah. And if you know the secret to drafting Born of the Gods, send us a tweet at MTAcast. Try to get into 140 characters. Yeah.
I will say that you guys spiteful returned. I still know that, guys. If there's
good
anything
job.
I know,
good
spiteful
job.
Return, good card. I have won with it. I have died to it.
Yeah, we died to that card too.
Yes, we did.
Oh, although we died to that card and like four other cards.
I died. Like any, I died to just that card.
As in any one of those four cards would have killed us.
Yeah. I've killed people with just spiteful return, I think.
What makes that card so good?
It's just that it has so much reach. There is a
but
point
not,
at
but
which
it does not actually have reach.
Yeah, no, it does. The creature does not have reach, but the card
it's
has
It's hard
reach.
To stop it from killing you.
Yeah, it is.
If they've done anything, if it's not the only card you've played in the game.
Yeah.
If you've played that and any two other spells, then it's like,
it's
oh.
It's really
then
good.
You're winning.
There is a point, and its bestow cost is 4, so it's so easy for them to just be like, I can suicide this guy in. Get in for 2 damage, you'll kill off the guy, and I still have spiteful returned.
Yeah,
to get you for 2.
Bestowed it on a guy, and then it fell off.
Yeah, exactly, and then it fell off. And I've just had it like yesterday. There was a game where I was in control, like I had finally stabilized. I was a more controlling deck, but I was at 4 life, and I was like, "That's fine." And then he plays spiteful returned bestowed on something,
and then you go,
and I'm just like,
shit.
Gross. And it's inevitable. Like, if that thing attacks, like,
you
what
can't
can
do
you
anything
do?
About
nothing.
It. There's literally nothing you can do about it.
You're going to lose. Is that 2 life?
Nothing.
What could I do
Is
about
there nothing?
It then?
You
okay.
could gain 2 life.
Let's try it. I can gain 2 life. I could Farika's cure something.
Flavortext Theater presents Movie Pitches, the game in which Maria, Megan, and Ben pitch some movies. That'll be summer blockbusters based on cards in Born of the Gods. Will they be hits or pieces of shit? That's what we're here to decide.
This is the sound of a pack that's about to be opened. Here we go, pack.
Wizards, if you're listening, take note of our movie pitches. Perhaps you can use them in your new Magic the Gathering movie.
Yeah, that's right. You're welcome
I'm
for all these
I'm taking a card at
ideas.
Random. Oh, this is going to be a good movie.
All right. I got a great idea for a films that you're going to want to seize.
Uh-huh. All right, what is it? What
this is
it?
Films is all about what is your life going to be like now that you got multiple heads?
Wow.
It's the future. Everyone's growing multiple heads. And when you cut off one head, more heads grows back. So this is a movie all about what happens and how you're going to devote your life. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
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 I just don't know what this card is.
Oh, I think it's a Hydra. It's a
aspect
of
Hydra.
Yeah, man. It's going to be great.
Nice. I got a movie for you here.
All right, hit me.
In this movie, it's a girl. And this girl,
like liking it.
Yeah, it's a rom-com.
Oh, I like
right?
that.
And there's a guy that she's chasing, but then he's kind of really shitty to her. So she like starts instead developing like really strong, devoted relationships with her friends and family again. And then when that guy comes chasing back after her, she's like, she just turns him away because she's got these strong relationships. She's really devoted to her friends and family.
What do you call it?
She's like, I call it Thassa's rebuff.
All right, you guys, I got a great movie for you. Ready?
Yeah,
are
yeah,
you
what
ready?
Is it? Yeah.
So there's this family of farmers in 1930s Dust Bowl. Oh, okay.
Dark.
So like, yeah, it's a drama. They fallen on bad times, no rain, their crops have just gone to butt. There's nothing they can do. So there's this really dramatic scene where they're all in the living room and Pa's got a shotgun.
Uh-huh.
And he's like, all right, we're doing this together. We're not doing it at all. They take it. They each blow their brains out. Cut to heaven. They're in heaven. Everything's better. It's really great and nice everywhere. And they're planting their fields in the clouds.
What do you call this film?
And it's harvest time. Sky reaping. Coming to a theater. June 2014. Sky reaping.
All right, this movie is kind of like, you know, it's like an everyman movie. It's about this guy. He gets a job for, you know, a very powerful god. You know, he's just doing his thing. He's regenerating. He's attacking for seemingly no reason. But then every once in a while, he's like, oh, I feel so inspired to drain one life from my opponent.
Oh, God.
Then... I really feel like the amount of effort that you're putting into your pitch today
is low.
Just not bringing it.
Well, look, the can all be winners.
Servant of Tiamat.
Timoret.
Whatever.
You guys, I've got an idea for this movie. It's about this poor dude named Felix, except no one knows him that well. So they just like don't pay attention to him. They don't ever get his name right. And finally, one day, he's like, do you know what? I'm done with this. I'm done with all of you guys treating me like crap. I'm gonna get back at all of you. I'm gonna steal all your shit and pawn it. And this is a retraction helix. His name is Felix and no one said it correctly.
So sad.
I have another pitch.
Okay.
Mm.
It's gonna be directed by Martin Scorsese.
Ooh, nice.
It's a take on The Departed, but it's just called Drown in Sorrow. And you're just gonna be sad at the end.
And everybody is just fucking
Everybody's dead. You're just sad.
I have another rom-com for you guys.
Oh, yeah.
It's called Greatheart. Fuck it.
It's a Mel Gibson film, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, Greatheart. I have a film pitch for you guys. It's gonna be more of like an indie movie.
Sure.
It's about Sundance. A girl, and she lives in a very traditional gypsy family in the countryside.
Sure, yeah. Makes sense.
Yeah. And she really wants to dance with fire. She wants to be a fire twirler, but her parents are like, no, you can't, because it's too dangerous. But one day, she just rebels. She runs away. She becomes a fire dancer. Seder Fire Dancer.
Why is Seder in this movie
Because
title?
It's her last name.
Oh.
Okay. Great.
Okay.
What a shitty pack.
I
this
know.
This pack sucks dick.
Was there even a rare in this pack?
Yeah, Seder Fire Dancer.
Oh,
what
Jesus.
The hell are you... Well, you're taking the Skyguard,
right?
This is a
first pick.
We had a Necron
Skyguard, guys.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We have Divination. There's Drown in Sorrow.
Drown in Sorrow.
No.
Retraction Helix.
Are you going to first pick Drown in Sorrow or Skyguard?
No,
Skyguard.
Drown in Sorrow is not good. Why do you think Drown in Sorrow is good?
I don't know. Because Noah Bradley drew it, and it's pretty.
It's very pretty.
Oh, I mean,
very pretty.
The art's fine.
There's skulls in the clouds.
Are we doing an art draft? I think I'd still want Retraction Helix.
Let's do an art draft.
You guys, art draft. That would be fun.
That would be fun. I think this is one of those times that we talk about when we first pick a Crone Skyguard.
Yeah.
Probably second pick would be Retraction Helix.
Mm,
yeah.
Yep.
Third pick.
Divination.
Kragma Butcher.
Yeah. That's about
but
it.
You don't want to get in that red trap. Maybe Divination and then Drown in Sorrow. Drown in Sorrow is not that terrible.
I think if I was going black, I'd prefer the Servant of Tiamat.
Whoa, harsh words.
Oh. I don't know.
All right, guys.
These are the kinds of packs that we were opening online, by the way.
Yeah, we really didn't have anything good.
No, I didn't open, out of three drafts, I opened no good rares.
Maybe there's something wrong with the random number generator on Magic Online.
Don't go down that rabbit hole, Ben. Dangerous rabbit hole.
Dear Abby. Oh. Dear Abby from a listener. Yeah. I'm going to mention at this point, we had a Dear Abby from a listener who wanted to hear the origin story of our show.
Yeah.
How we got started, our first moments in magic, that sort of thing, which I think is a great question.
Yeah. I was researching, you know, ways to make a bomb out of gamma radiation. But something went horribly wrong, and Maria walked onto the test site. And so then I ran out and I pushed her out of the way, but then the bomb went off.
Yeah.
I'm the villain. I'm from another planet.
To hear the true story of what happened to us, we're not going to actually tell it on our show. We're going to save it because we're being interviewed on The Deck Tease, which is another magic podcast, which is a great interview show. So if you want to hear our story, we're going to tell the whole thing, all of the gritty details. Listen to The Deck Tease. Download that.
You should also go check it out because she has lots of wonderful interviews with lots of magic personalities.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So get on over there.
Like Marshall Sutcliffe.
Yeah.
Who does Limited Resources.
Paulo Vitor Damo
de Rosa. Which is a strictly better podcast than ours.
Strictly better. Strictly better. Wait, no. I think if you're looking for laughs.
Strictly different.
If you're looking for laughs, it's not strictly better.
Okay, sure.
So the question we can answer on the show today is about playing with a four booster sealed deck, which was a format on Magic Online recently.
I've played four booster sealed as a way to sort of like prep for regular sealed, like in person, because it's like, oh, you don't have to invest the same number of packs, and you can still get a little bit of practice out of it.
Sure. So you get four boosters. It's a 30 card deck. He's wondering if he should go with a 13 land curve and have an even mana curve, but he's not sure if that's the best way to do four booster draft. I mean, sealed.
If you have 40 lands, 17 spells, that's about 42% of your slots are lands, and that would be about 13 lands in a 30 card deck.
Sure.
So, and I think the most I'll get to it in a minute. Keep going, guys. Sorry. That's the worst interruption I could have ever had. I had a thought about that, but then I was like, no, I don't.
Okay. Yeah, so I would run 13 lands. Strategies can be pretty similar. Milling is incredibly strong in this strategy.
Oh, God. You can mill on 30.
If you have a Phoenix,
you
should probably do it.
If you have a Phoenix, you should mill in regular sealed.
Yeah, totally. Yeah,
mill away, baby.
And then similarly, you probably want to run, you know, 10 to 15 creatures or something like
that. You still want that many?
You can have a few fewer creatures.
Okay.
But you're still gonna want to win with creatures.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
I was just gonna say it's important to remember that you don't play four booster sealed if you don't want to. Don't let anyone make you play four booster sealed.
It's not a
he
real
says
format.
That people don't turn up on time for the local store, so they do sealed instead of draft, sad face.
That is really sad face.
That, is
that
sad
just
face.
Means that you
I feel for you.
Man.
I don't know how big of a city you're living in, but maybe just try and find
a
different a store.
City?
Try and find a different store. Move to a bigger city.
Or play online. He's thinking
or
about playing
online. That's a
it's
yeah.
fun.
People are always on time online.
He also put in he wants to build his first standard deck, not sure where to start.
It really sort of depends on what your collection looks like and what you're looking to spend and or trade. But a great way to find some decks to try out is I recommend StarCityGames.com. And you can see all of the deck lists that have recently top-aided their events.
Yes.
There's also, on the right-hand side, they have their SCG IQs, which is the Invitational Qualifiers, which are their local events, which are held each weekend. And you can also see deck lists that have won those, which is a little bit more helpful if you're not looking to spend maybe the same amount of money, because you'll see a little bit more variation in those decks. Those won't be strictly tier one decks. You'll have some more options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good place to start.
So try that out, man.
Or just get brewing and make something crazy.
Yeah. Try that too.
I saw a crazy deck recently.
Oh, yeah?
Oh, what
in standard.
Oh.
This is a deck that's built around cards like Hidden Strings.
The Hinstream deck is happening. Is it happening?
Oh, God. Is it happening?
It is. Have you guys seen this deck?
No.
No.
It is a standard deck. Hidden Strings, if you may not recall, it was a pretty unplayable common from Dragon's Maze. And it says, you may tap or untap target permanent. Then you may tap or untap another target permanent. And it has Cipher, which means that when you can cipher it onto a creature when that creature deals damage. When a creature deals damage to a player, its controller can cast a copy of the encoded card without paying its mana cost. So, can you guys think of a way to abuse this?
Inspired.
No. I mean, that so would be excited. A way.
I saw someone use it on Agent of Fates.
Agent of Fates. I don't know. Seems like some weak sauce to me.
All right.
Let's see.
A strong sauce, Ben.
You could use it with lands. It's probably...
What about ciphering this onto, say, a favored hoplite?
Because all damage is prevented to him.
And he gets counters every time. Yes.
So if you play this on turn two...
Oh, I see.
You can put two counters on him, or you can untap your lands, play something else, and then target him after combat to make him big. Yeah. You can also, there's a, let's see.
Too bad he still dies to Doomblade.
Everything dies to Doomblade.
Oh, everything dies to Doomblade, but there's nothing stopping you from running God's Willing in this deck, which will save anything from Doomblade.
That's true.
Everything can be saved from Doomblade.
every white thing.
Every white thing.
Isn't that just always the way it is?
The deck also runs Niv-Magus Elemental, which says...
What is that? When is...
It is a. Oh. It was a rare from Return to Ravnica. It's a 1/2 blue-red hybrid card. It's a one drop, and you can exile an instant or sorcery you control from the stack to put 2+1+ encounters on Niv-Magus Elemental.
Oh, snap. So you can take the copy... the cipher copy of Hidden Strings that you are quote-unquote casting and exile that instead. Right.
So you get the heroic trigger because you are casting the spell. Even though it's ciphered, you still get to cast the spell. And then you can exile the spell before it resolves to also put counters on Niv-Magus Elemental. So there's some pretty crazy things that you can do with this deck to get get really big right away.
Is it, I mean, do you think it's viable?
No.
I mean, it sounds really cool.
No. Where would you find deck lists like this?
I know that Greg Hatch, who is a streamer on Twitch, has been streaming with this deck, and I believe he played it in the Channel Fireball PTQ, the 10K PTQ that was also streaming on Twitch. So you can probably see highlights of it on there. Yeah. And I know he did a deck tech on the Channel Fireball coverage as well. So you can check that out on Twitch. Twitch.tv/Channel Fireball, probably.
And also, that reminds me, Daily MTG also posts different deck lists from online events, etc.
If you're looking to put together a deck, you can do that. If it seems like a lot of work to put together a standard deck, it is... they do sell event decks that you can just buy off the shelf and that are legal to play in Standard.
Mm-hmm.
And they're not they're not tier one decks. They're not the best decks that will always win. But if you just want to get started and have some fun, it's a great place to start. And then you can always make changes based on the cards you have available to that deck and build from there.
Yep.
Awesome. Well, everybody, on our show, we have a special deal with our listeners.
Oh, what's that deal?
It's a sacred contract.
It is an unspoken... Well, it's spoken. It's a con.
Is it kind of, wait, is it a deal like one of those... When you buy a sandwich, we punch a card, and after 10 sandwiches, you get a free sandwich?
Or is it a deal like, I kill your wife, and you kill my son?
That is a dark deal. Dark deal.
Which of those deals would you say it's more like?
I want to say sandwich deal.
Our deal is, if you like our show, or if you don't, in fact, leave us a review on iTunes and we'll make a pun of your username.
Yeah.
This same deal now applies to Stitcher, because we're available on Stitcher. as well. We don't have any reviews on there yet, but we do have some reviews on iTunes. And when we do, we'll make a pun on your username. So we've got some new usernames to pun, everybody.
What are they? Let's
hear them. The first one is Shivan Atog.
Shivan Atog. I would Shivan a collection of pogs for you. God. And those are... That's really valuable to me because you can't find pogs anymore.
Shiv an ATOG. Just remember, if you ever go to prison, always shiv an ATOG on your first day so people respect you.
I was just going to say I'd shiv your ATOG.
Got there first.
We have Minatello. Minatello.
Oh, Minatello. Let me take a minute to tell you how great you are.
Minatello, I think... You are the most underrated Teenage Mutant Ninja.
Yes! How do you steal my joke every time?
I just know your brain.
Hey, Minatello. You're as more delicious than Minjello.
Wow, that was really phoned in, Maria.
God damn it. All right, you can't possibly steal my joke for shocking goat boy.
I agree.
Shocking goat boy. You've shocked me. Oi.
Shocking goat boy. Why are you using decent removal on an 01 token?
Hey, shocking goat boy. I'd do a shocker to your goat boy.
Whoa.
Yeah.
Got there.
Wasn't going to steal that one.
Our final one is 132217.
Well, 132217. All I have to say to you is 1-0-0-1-1-1. Oh.
Hey, 132217. Your numbers add up to 16, and that's old enough for me.
Hey, 132217. Two of the numbers in your number, two of the consecutive numbers are also consecutive numbers in my phone number.
For those of you who have been trying to figure out Ben's phone number from the clues, there's a new one for
you. You now have three clues as three to Ben's clues. Phone number. Oh. Well, everybody, that's our show for this week. I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
Yeah, and if you want to have some more fun with us while you're not listening to us,
I don't. I'm done.
I said that in a really weird way. I made a little quiz online.
Oh.
Which MTA host are you? So if you want to waste some time at work, go to magicthamaturing.com and you can play our quiz. Will you be Maria, Megan, or Ben? Only you will find out. Next week, we're going to have a very special guest on our show, friend of the show, Matthias Hunt.
Yeah. He'll be telling us about his modern deck, Amulet of Vigor, which he played at the Pro Tour.
Yes.
Was a crazy deck, too.
I mean, it was awesome. I mean, he did a deck tech on it. It was featured a lot day one. People were just nuts about this deck, so.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
He will potentially say a lot of things, which I don't understand.
Yep. Remember, you can subscribe to our podcast on iTunes. You can check us out on mtgcast.com, themeatery.org, Stitcher, magicthamaturing.com. Send us an email at magicthamaturing@gmail.com. And check us out on the Deck Tees. Remember to listen to that.
Yeah, man.
Guys, thanks for coming along for the ride.
Keep your hands inside Magic the Gathering at all times.
Where we're going, we don't need roads.